You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. The federal government shutdown continues into another week. No deal appears in sight. And another important deadline looms on the horizon. So let's talk with our Dakota political junkies. Lisa Hager is an associate professor of political science at South Dakota State University. She connected with us from SDPB's Janine Basinger studio at SDSU in Brookings. David Wiltsey is a professor of political science also at SDSU. He stopped by our Kirby family studio here in Sioux Falls for the conversation. Both are representing their own opinions and not necessarily the opinions of South Dakota State University or the Board of Regents. Here is our Dakota Political Junkies analysis today. We are in the midst of a federal government shutdown right now, and the days are dragging on. And day by day, David Wiltsey, we'll start with you. There is another reminder of, like, we're about to enter this deadline. We're about to enter that deadline. Mm-hmm. And there's been a lot on the radio this morning as I was driving into work about SNAP benefits ending. But let's look at the big picture a little bit. What do we know about this government shutdown and how it compares to others, or some of the significant things that it brings up for you?
Yeah, so far we know it's one of the longest ones ever, and there's virtually no sign that it's going to end soon. And what I think really separates this shutdown from prior shutdowns is the president and the governing party just don't seem all that interested in reopening the government. They don't seem to have any sense that there's a big stake for them with the government shutdown. And in many ways, they're just taking this opportunity to keep on doing some of the cutting, some of the eliminating of programs and the evisceration of others that they were trying to do before. And this is just seen as another tool that they can use to those same ends.
Yeah. And Dr. Hager, I was looking at South Dakota Searchlight reporting today, and they had screenshotted, you know, what some of the websites were saying, and they were often due to the radical left Democrat shutdown. You know, this information is not being updated right now. We know that Secretary of Homeland Security Kristi Noem had made a video to be played at airports blaming the Democrats for the shutdown. So to Dr. Wiltsey's point, this is also an opportunity that is being used by the administration to place blame on whose fault it is and to sort of market to the American people who they should call and blame. That feels new to me.
Yeah, even just yesterday I was preparing for a class where I was actually looking up historical data on the Department of Justice's website, and yeah, that same banner popped up at the top of the screen, something along the lines of Democrats are the reason behind the government shutdown and, you know, whatnot. And it was just kind of surprising to me, having not seen that in previous government shutdowns. So, yes, this is very definitely being used as a political tactic. And the media is also talking a lot about who is to blame for with respect to this particular shutdown. And I think that's just making this even more political for people, because the major question is who is at fault, rather than the question being what needs to happen to bring people together to try to reopen the government.
Is there a central dividing point? Is what needs to happen? I'll go ahead and ask the question then. What needs to happen to bring people together to end the shutdown, Lisa?
That's a tough question to answer, but I think the biggest thing is right now you've got some heels really dug in. In particular, the Democrats want an extension of expiring tax credits that would make health insurance that's purchased on the marketplace cheaper. They want reversal of Trump's cuts to Medicaid. Republicans don't want to give on those particular issues. Like Dave was talking about, you have, you know, them having, you know, this interest in continuing to cut different government programs. This really gives them an easy opportunity to continue to do so. So I think from those key issue areas, it's very hard for the two parties to come together, because this also gets at some really core aspects of each of their platforms. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, ideally, you need to have the two groups come together, two parties, not groups.
Yeah. So November 1st, open enrollment will begin for the Affordable Care Act, and that's when people should expect to see the tax credits and the premium costs changing. Dave Wiltsey, what would you add to that? What needs to happen to bring people together to reopen the government?
Well, enough people have to get harmed. And right now, what the administration is very deftly doing is mitigating the harm to all their key constituencies. They're cobbling together all sorts of different ways and schemes to pay the military, to pay certain key folks within within their constituencies. But they're allowing these things to happen to those that they see outside of their constituency. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, seeing some of this just flagrant, well, we're going to be cutting Democrat programs here. We're going to be targeting our cuts and whatnot.
Yeah. Institutions. You know, that, the president has said institutions that he feels are, quote, Democrat
right,
institutions.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've not seen that before during a shutdown. And like you were saying, with this kind of the politicization of these things, with these, whether it be the websites, the messages at airports. I mean, normally the Hatch Act would take care of that because you're, you know, it's against the law to use these things for partisan purposes like that. But that's just not how things are running right now. We really are in a unique shutdown, and yeah. It's not terribly surprising seeing how all these norms are being violated everywhere else.
So the military, a gift from an anonymous donor could pay the United States military, Lisa, is that even allowed? As a veteran of the United States military, that seems like a shocking idea to me. I was shocked. How in the world could we have our salaries paid for by a donor? By
yeah,
a wealthy, presumably American, but it could be anyone.
Yeah, I don't really see how that would be allowable under current federal law. I would definitely have to dig into it a little more. But, you know, when you have, you know, an anonymous donor and you don't know the source, like, I mean, it's just really boils down to basics relating to the government where Congress has the power of the purse. You know, we don't have the power of the purse with the budget being, you know, with anybody else, you know, there's, so I just don't see any sort of legal pathway to that. But again, you know, there's a lot of unprecedented types of things that are occurring lately where, you know, things you never thought you'd talk about. Here we are talking about them.
Right.
And Congress is just ceding these things to them. I mean, they're not even pushing back. And normally Congress, irrespective of who's the party in the majority and who's the party in the presidency, usually Congress is pretty good at defending its territory, is really good at defending its turf. And we're just not seeing that here. And that's probably the most remarkable thing to me.
Do we know why?
They're afraid. They see President Trump as being in such a powerful position vis-a-vis their constituency. They're just concerned with their own electoral survival. Mm-hmm. Their biggest fear is getting primaried, you know, getting clipped from the right.
So to be clear, they're afraid of going against a president that they perceive as very popular in a way that could impact their ability to win their next primary.
Exactly, because he is very popular with their constituencies, with the core electoral base that they have. And it's a rational fear, but in the past, it's just not been as potent as it is now.
Do you think
just something that's so personalized about it that, you know, they really do fear the persona.
Do you think that they're looking at polling numbers that indicate this? Like, what do we think?
No, they're not looking at data.
Okay, it's not a data-driven
No, I mean, this
decision
is just,
to say this is what my state wants, and therefore I'm going to take this stand or that stand.
And I would guess that most politicians aren't that in tune to the polls. I mean, they're not sticking their finger in the wind when it comes to analyzing data like that. Yeah. They're very good at sticking their finger into the wind when it comes to just the feelings that they get from their constituency.
Mm-hmm.
And Trump still has a way of speaking to that that base of the Republican Party right now that they fear.
Lisa, what would you add to that? The basis for some of the decision, there is a perception that Congress is sort of sidestepping some of their responsibilities there. I suppose the other argument would be that they're in lockstep with the president on the decisions he's making, and therefore they're holding firm on a coalition to prevent the Democrats from taking any political power. How do you see it, and what are the nuances of what you see happening?
So I wouldn't necessarily assume that everyone is in lockstep with the president if we just kind of look at a different issue with the Argentinian beef imports. We're definitely seeing members of Congress who are from rural states breaking with the president. But I think this gets back to what Dave is talking about, where in general, there's a lot of political costs with breaking from the Republican coalition and trying to work with the Democrats to open the government in the situation. For electoral reasons, we have political science research that says that members of Congress are, quote, single-minded seekers of re-election. And that's not to say that's the only thing that drives their behavior, but it's the necessary precondition to be in office. So you can't continue to be in office if you don't get elected. You can't make what you consider good public policy if you're not in office. So in my opinion, it's always in the back of their mind. They're thinking about it. Because if they do want to have any impact on policy, they have to be there. So like Dave was saying, I don't think it has anything to do with, oh, they're specifically looking at polling data on any particular issue. They just know this is maybe not the hill to die on, so to speak, if I want to continue serving in Congress.
Yeah. And issue to issue, they are not in lockstep with the president. I mean, Trump is very heterodox when it comes to, you know, what we think of the core Republican issues over the past 30, 40 years. And one of the things, one of the uneasy feelings that a lot of traditional Republicans have is there is policy space between them and the president. But some of these things are just so potent and just speak to the identity of a lot of those Trump supporters that they don't quite understand themselves. So they just can't connect to those voters as well as Trump can. And they have seen that this really is kind of a new shifting base to the Republican Party, and they don't know exactly how to deal with it. And they do know not to get in front of the train that Trump is on this.
So the stakes are incredibly high for Americans in a variety of ways. I wish we could spend hours talking about, are the stakes high for the president, for the parties? Are there political stakes here, Lisa, and where are they the highest right now?
Well, I think this gets back to what Dave is saying. You have to have more people being impacted by this government shutdown negatively. And the Republicans have done a pretty good job of trying to mitigate that. Right now, the Democrats' biggest argument are related to programs that your typical Republican base, especially those Trump supporters, aren't going to be willing to come to the table over or encourage their members of Congress. You know, all of these basically social safety net kinds of programs, they're just not going to be overly concerned about SNAP benefits necessarily running out. And so I think as things drag on, as more people are being impacted with things like, you know, Medicare, you know, as the funding for that starts to, you know, maybe diminish and payments start being delayed and maybe more of the issues at airports, I think as maybe some of those things start dragging on, real issues with not being able to pay the military, I think then you would maybe see some movement.
I actually think, you know, the SNAP thing might have an impact eventually. One of the big misperceptions about SNAP is that it is focused in urban areas, and we have all these stereotypes around your typical SNAP recipient. But SNAP is used by tens of millions of Americans across the political spectrum, across the country, and in rural areas, it is particularly well used. Yeah. So in some of these areas, it might eventually hit these constituents, but how apparent that will be and how quickly it will become apparent, that's anybody's guess.
What about GDP? The impact of a shutdown on GDP is enormous.
Well, again, that's one of those things.
I think it was $3 billion. I looked it up this morning. The record holder, 34-day shutdown, $3 billion loss of GDP.
Mm-hmm. And again, that's one of those things that's diffused over time. The full impact of it isn't really going to be felt immediately. And that's, you know, with any of these macroeconomic trends, you know, it's hard to put your finger on exactly when it becomes salient and exactly when it becomes good politics. and who's going to benefit. Yeah. I mean, there are times where we don't even have a good sense, 6-8 months out of an election, as to what party is going to benefit from prevailing economic conditions. Is it going to be the president's party? Or is it going to be the opposition party?
Right.
Because some of these things can be very mixed. Some of the signals that we get can be very mixed. And right now, if you know, it's going to impact our GDP, it's going to impact growth, but right now that's not going to be as apparent as it might be several months down the road after the government's reopened.
Yeah. Research isn't being done.
No.
Data isn't being collected. Lisa, what are we? What are the, some of the, I mean, it's fairly simple as a reporter to go find people who are out of food. And it can be easy to ask somebody, you know, what their, you know, pay their veterans benefits if they're coming or not. And at this point, they still are. It's a little harder to track what is the gap in information when the government's not working. What's not happening? What's not being collected? What's not being approved or regulated? What are some highlights for you, Lisa, that you think would be noteworthy?
I mean, I think it's just having people have a better understanding of what it actually means when you have the government shut down. I think right now the focus has been so much who's to blame, maybe to a certain extent, what needs to happen, or just some educational efforts with respect to what's a continuing resolution or things like that. And so I don't think that there's always that sort of discussion of some of these other sorts of areas that are shut down too during this particular government shutdown. To say shut down too many times in one sentence, I just noticed that.
Well, and some of these,
but anyway, you know, you know, people just aren't noticing those things. You know, like people are just asking me questions, you know, about like explain this government shutdown, explain like what needs to happen, you know, who is actually to blame. And of course, I'm always like, well, that's really for you to decide more than anything else. But, you know, again, that just shows what the narrative is with respect to the shutdown.
Yeah. And some of the agencies that are shut down are the ones who are conducting the surveys, who are keeping track of SNAP recipients. And that's, you know, how many people are receiving SNAP, how many people are going in, how many people are going out. So we're not going to have any proper sense because we're not even asking the questions right now. Or if we are, they're, you know, it's not nearly to the extent that we would when the government is fully operational.
So I went to that point. I went and covered the No Kings rally in Sioux Falls for SDPB two weekends ago now, talked to some Trump supporters who were there showing their support for the president, and they said two things very clearly. One was, these people out here with their signs should blame the Democrats for the shutdown, and two, they didn't care if the government ever reopened, as long as the people who shut it down on the Democratic side, in their minds, were not getting paid. Mm-hmm. So the point that I want to make with that is, what is missed and what is not missed among the average citizen, the Trump voter, it has to touch your life in some ways, which maybe goes back to what you're saying about people have to suffer. But the value of the government is up for debate here.
It is, but we have a phenomenon that in the United States that people have called in the past called the submerged state. We have a sense that we've got this big government, and it's doing all these things that are unnecessary, all these things that we really don't need. But we also don't have a sense of how dependent we are on it. Mm. And we don't have a full sense as to what programs we are benefiting from at any given moment, especially indirectly benefiting, but sometimes directly. I mean, you know, there was that famous quip that Obama had several years ago where he saw a protest and a person had a sign, "Keep your government hands out of my Medicare." I mean, how do you even react to something like that? But I mean, here's somebody who's benefiting from a government program, doesn't even recognize that they are.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, we are all going to be harmed by this. It's just a matter of how quickly we understand that and how quickly that impact will come. And unfortunately, we don't see these benefits clearly all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But we will, in the end, everybody's going to be impacted by it and everybody will be harmed.
Yeah.
But again, like we were saying before, the difference here is they are supplementing the spending in some very key strategic ways. Yeah. That's just making this that much harder to be felt in the end.
Yeah. Also of note, this president has been, many people have wondered if he'll run for a third term, which is against our Constitution, but it's not out of the realm of conversational possibility, at least. Dave, tell us a little bit about what President Trump is saying and Steve Bannon is saying about Trump in 2028.
Well, he's very open to the possibility, and he's talked about it, you know, just in the last few days. He's talked about it before. I don't know if this is a joke. I don't know if this is a smokescreen. I don't know if this is just something that he's throwing up, so we're talking about that and not something else. I mean, who knows? But the very fact that we're talking about it, you know, that's a huge shift in American politics, that somebody in office is just talking about doing something that is flagrantly unconstitutional. And we don't seem to be batting an eye in the end. I mean, this is something that, you know, there should not be any conversation about this. He should be getting clear signals from party leadership, from congressional leadership, from the courts that don't even try this.
So we heard, Lisa, you mentioned the Argentine beef. You know, we heard John Thune and other U.S. Senator John Thune, majority leader for the Republican Party, we heard him say that the president was misguided on his plan to bring in more beef from Argentina. But we haven't heard him speak out about some of these other things. We don't know if that is because he hasn't been asked or because he thinks it's insignificant and unconstitutional and therefore beneath comment. And we don't know whether he thinks it's a possibility. What kinds of conversations should we be having about a president who has floated the idea of an unconstitutional bid for a third term?
It does really go back a lot to what Dave was talking about, where we don't even know if he's necessarily serious about this, if this is more of a smokescreen to get people talking about that rather than some of these things about here with the shutdown. So it's really kind of hard to know. I'm guessing for a lot of our members of Congress, they're in the same situation with the government shutdown as they are with this idea of Trump running for a third term. Until they really know what his true intentions are, it's probably not worth weighing in and getting in front of that quote-unquote Trump train that Dave was talking about. So I think right now, when they want to break with the president, it makes a little bit more sense to do something with the beef imports because that's something that so directly impacts a large chunk of their constituencies.
And the problem for Republicans here in terms of presidential politics is this is the time where presidential hopefuls really need to be getting organized, really need to get the ball going for their campaign. And if people are taking him semi-seriously, they're not going to be as willing to step up and put in the organizational efforts that need to be made right now. And they should have been doing this a year ago. Not a year ago, but
building that campaign infrastructure.
After the election.
Yeah.
So this might push the pause, you know, a lot of Republicans might be pushing the pause button on their consideration for running. So they could be harmed by this even if he doesn't run. But who knows? He might. And the problem is, who's going to stop him? Is the party going to say, no, you can't do this? Is the caucus going to say, no, you can't do this from Congress? It's anybody's guess. And that's so damaging to our institutions and to our democracy when you don't accept those fundamental rules of the game.
Right, right. Lisa Hager and David Wilsey, both with the Political Science Department at South Dakota State University, both appearing on our show as analysts and not as employees of SDSU or the Board of Regents.